purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada.
The whole world is enchanted by three modes of material nature. Those who are bewildered by these three modes cannot understand that transcendental to this material nature is the Supreme Lord, Krishna. Every living entity under the influence of material nature has a particular type of body and a particular type of psychological and biological activities accordingly. There are four classes of men functioning in the three modes of material nature. Bhagavad Gita is being spoken by Bhagwan. Bhagwan means the absolute truth, from whom all relative truths are eternally depending upon. So many people have so many opinions of how to solve the problems of the world and what the problems of the world are. There are many great philosophers, many great social reformers, politicians, professors, and even the common person on the street is very proud to give his or her opinion of what are the problems of life and how to solve. But Krishna is different because his opinion is based in the highest truth, because everything is emanating from him. He is the creator of this material existence. He is the creator of every living entity. If anyone can claim that and prove it, then they are fit to give their opinion. Otherwise, we should simply humble ourselves to the opinion of one who knows. And that is Krishna. Matta paratanam nanyat kinchid asti dhananjayat. Mayi sarvamidam protam sutrit manigana iva. There is no truth superior to Krishna. Everything rests upon him as pearls are strung on a thread. So Bhagavad Gita is the greatest literature because it is spoken by the supreme authority. And Srila Prabhupada, our Guru Maharaj, would like to say, because Krishna has proven himself to be the supreme authority, so many people want to present their own ideas to human society in the name of Krishna, that this is what Krishna actually means. When Krishna says, Man mana bhava mad bhakto mad yajim nandamasa, mam evaisya shishatyam te prati jani priyoshi. It's very simple. Anyone who even has the slightest understanding of the Sanskrit language knows that he's saying in this verse, always think of me, worship me, offer your homage to me, become my devotee. In this way you will come to me without fail. And he also explains, sarva dharman purityajya mam ekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva pakevyo mokshayishyami mahasuja. Abandon all varieties of religion and surrender to me. I shall protect you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. Mamupetya punara janma dukalayam ashashvatam natnavanti mahatmana samsidim paramam gata. That those who are truly intelligent, they follow my path, they take shelter of me, and they attain the supreme destination from the miserable condition of the dualities of this world. So when Krishna says me, it means Krishna. But there are so many philosophers and so many politicians and so many social reformers and so many intellectuals who want to impose their own idea. Some say, actually, I am Krishna. So when Krishna says me, he means actually not Krishna, but me. And some say when Krishna says me, he doesn't mean Krishna. He means the unborn, unmanifest, impersonal essence within Krishna. And in this way, there are so many innumerable interpretations, all in the name of Krishna. One time someone came to our Guru Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, and he said that my guru is Krishna. Very famous guru. In fact, this particular guru has millions of followers. And he says, my guru is Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada said, oh, there are tens and thousands of gurus in this world, in India, who say that they are Krishna. Practically everyone's guru says they're Krishna. And they all say that they're the only Krishna. So who to believe? And when I was searching after a spiritual master, I personally met so many gurus who claim to be Krishna, and so many disciples who claim that their guru is Krishna. Some have millions of followers, some have one or two followers, some have no followers, but they're aspiring to get. It's just a matter of time. So Srila Prabhupada said, whether they're Krishna or not, that you may not know. But one thing you do know is that if anyone in India wants to be called God, he says he's Krishna. So that means you know for sure Krishna is God. You don't know for sure whether your guru is Krishna. So be safe and just worship Krishna. Then you know you're getting the right thing. And Krishna descended into this world to speak the Bhagavad Gita. And the real spiritual masters, they never say, I'm Krishna. They are saying, here is Krishna. Krishna says, surrender to me. I want to teach you how to surrender to Krishna. I want to teach you how to love Krishna. How to receive the mercy of Krishna. So the Bhagavad Gita is the highest knowledge because it is spoken by the highest truth, the personality of Godhead. There is no question of the Jivatma having an argument with the Paramatma about what is reality. Because we are all completely dependent on Krishna for our existence. One time someone came to our Guru Maharaj and said, I am God. And my Guru Maharaj said, then you show me your universal form, your Virat Rup. Can you do that? Can you devour all the living entities in your mouths? Can you show me the sun and the moon as your eyes? And the person said, well, not yet, but in the future I will. But God does not have to wait for the future. God is always God. God does not become God. When Krishna was a little tiny infant baby, not even 1 year old, he was an infant. He was only days old. The great Rakshasi Putana, who was more powerful than tens and thousands of soldiers, she came to kill him. And he effortlessly sucked the milk from her body along with her life air, and with all her strength and power she could not resist. When he was just a tiny little child, he opened his mouth and he showed the entire cosmic manifestation to his mother Yashoda within his mouth. This is Krishna. This is the absolute truth. And the greatest rishis, the greatest sages, the greatest renunciates, the most learned scholars in all history, they all accept that Krishna is the absolute truth. Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, Nimbarkacharya, Vishnu Swami, they all accept Vishnu, Krishna is the absolute, the highest, the supreme lord of all lords. And even Shankaracharya, he taught a particular philosophy according to time and place. But in his commentary of Gita, he wrote, Narayano Varo Vyaktat, that Narayan is above and beyond all material existence. He is the supreme controller. And he accepted that Krishna is the absolute truth and that the Bhagavad Gita is the absolute truth. So here it is explained that the whole world is deluded by these three modes of material nature: goodness, passion, and ignorance. We think we're independent, but actually our independence has been surrendered to accepting complete subjugation under the three modes of material nature. Guru Maharaj would use the example that if you take a bull and you put a ring in his nose and you pull him with rope. In India you have seen so many bulls have rings in their noses because they're very powerful, but their noses are very soft. It's amazing how Krishna makes everyone humble somehow or other. Here's this big mighty bull, so heavy, so muscular, so ferocious, and a little skinny tiny little boy we have seen who's hardly 6-7 years old is pulling him by the nose ring and the bull is going wherever he wants. When you pull the bull to the left, the foolish bull thinks, now by my own free will I will go left. And then you pull him right, and he thinks, now by my own masculine nature I will decide to go right. And when you start twirling him around in circles and flipping him upside down, he says, now I would like to flip around and go in circles. But actually he's being forced. So similarly, we are all helplessly being forced to act in this world. People think by my free will I will smoke cigarettes, but actually it's just tamaguna, the lowest mode of ignorance, just telling you smoke, and you say, oh yes, I want to smoke. And the mode of passion, rajaguna, you must get more and more and more money, you must be greedy for more money, because money means power and money means enjoyment. So we're thinking that we're acting by our free will, but we are not. We are simply being forced, pulled by the rope. Guna means rope, pulled by the rope of passion. And someone else is thinking, I will give in charity. I will help the poor. And I will feel the pleasure of being the lord of their life by protecting them, providing for them. That is the mode of goodness, sattva-guna. Somehow or other, we are all being controlled and deluded by these three modes of material natures to act helplessly in so many ways. But we have our free will to understand that Krishna is beyond and above the modes of material nature. And if we act according to his direction, rather than the inner and external directions given by the three modes of material nature, then we can transcend this material existence forever. Arjuna had so many ideas, so many thoughts. He had so many conclusions and argumentations. And then he decided that if I just do what Krishna wants, I will be free from all the complexities and miseries of illusion. And that is intelligence. to utilize this God-given free will we have to simply accept the word of Krishna and stop speculating and stop giving our own opinions and stop listening to everyone else's opinions and just hear from Krishna and from those who are just the humble messengers delivering the word of Krishna with no motivation except to serve him and to help you. Krishna has appeared in this age of Kali Yuga in the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he displayed all the six opulences of Krishna. In reference to this verse, especially, it's very interesting how the Lord is above the modes of material nature. Before discussing Lord Chaitanya, let us go back to a previous age where the Lord descended as Nara Narayan Rishis. And Nara Narayan Rishi, they appeared in Badrikashram. That same place is today in the Himalayan mountain regions of Uttar Pradesh. Some of us have been there. We have gone on several yatras to Badrinath. And that is the place where Nara Narayan Rishi, the Supreme Lord of Vaikuntha, the husband of the Goddess of Fortune, appeared to perform tapasya to purify the world. That is simply mercy, compassion. The Lord is living in the spiritual world in the greatest opulence with his most intimate dear devotees, eternally enjoying the highest bliss, and he comes to this world of birth and death just to somehow or other attract us back to his world of happiness. So Nara Narayan Rishi began to perform tapasya to purify the world. But when Krishna wants to perform tapasya, it is something that is so great. We may be able to fast for a few days and we think, I am a great tapasi. Or some people in India, they go naked and they think, I am a very great tapasi. But what Nara Narayan Rishi were doing, no one has ever done. In fact, Lakshmi Devi in Vaikuntha, she could not even tolerate seeing her consort performing such tapasya. He was just sitting in the middle of the winter and in the middle of the summer with no shelter. So Lakshmi Devi incarnated as a tree called the Badri tree. It's a tree that grows in that vicinity. And that tree would give shade to Narayan in the summer and give warmth to him in the winter. And also, she was close to her beloved. And that is why Krishna is known as Badrinath, which means the Lord of Lakshmi who appeared as a Badri tree. So everyone was very much worshipping the Lord due to his great compassion. But Indra became very much afraid. Because the nature of a person, however learned and wise he is, if he's attached to material opulence, prestige, and power, the tendency is that that attachment covers one's good sense. Krishna says in Gita, Bhogaishvaya prasaktanam tayama patrita jatasa vyavashayatma kabudhir samadhu navadiyata. That those who are too much attached to sense objects and material opulences, their intelligence is clouded. The determination for real devotion cannot take place. So Indra was thinking that I have so much power and so much wealth, and I am the king of heaven. And anyone who is doing tapasya, they must be doing it because they want to take my kingdom away from me. I'm taking a great risk telling this story during the monsoon seasons when we're all sitting outside. But Indra will be very happy because we are glorifying Krishna. And ultimately we're glorifying him or facilitating Krishna's glories. So this is the nature of a person who's attached. He's always fearful that someone wants to take it away or that someone is competing or challenging me. If a person is not very good at something, then if somebody else becomes better, that person really doesn't matter because everyone else is better anyway. But if you're really good at something, if someone else is better, you become envious as anything. You cannot tolerate that anyone is trespassing my supremacy. Well, we all have this tendency in us. So, and in this way, the greater we are, the more fearful and miserable we become in the material sense. It is a fact. The more you become learned, I know students, they become number one in their class, in their studies. And the next year, if they're number two, they're totally miserable. They're totally frustrated. They're so envious. Huh? But somebody who's number 542nd, he doesn't really care who number one is. He doesn't even care who 541 is. We should all be striving to do our best, but we should not be attached. We should not think that we're the doer. But when we think we're the doer, we're very attached to doing, and we're very threatened and envious of anyone who's trying to do better. When you're attached to someone, you think everyone must want it. Huh? When someone's driving in a nice Mercedes-Benz, as he's driving in the road, he's thinking, everyone is envious of me. Everyone wants this car. But the brahmacharis and sannyasis, they look at him with tears in their eyes, that poor fool, poverty-stricken, no inner wealth. Yes? Anyway. So Indra was thinking, if Naranarayan Rishi are performing so much tapasya, I know what their goal is. They want to take over my kingdom, my palace. They want my beautiful wife. They want all of this. So I must somehow or other destroy them. And when Indra wants to destroy, he can destroy anyone except the Lord and his devotees. Because the Lord is all-powerful and his devotees are always protected from by him personally. So he sent beautiful, beautiful apsaras, the most elegant, lovely, heavenly damsels. They came and they created an atmosphere where there was birds chirping, very sweet, romantic songs. And there was very fragrant flowers growing and cool breezes that just by the touch of these breezes on your body, it just awakens desire to enjoy. And these lovely, lovely dancing girls came and they were dancing and singing and casting their glances. And Narayan Rishi was just completely undisturbed, didn't even take notice. Because Krishna's Atmaram, he's satisfied in himself. He doesn't require anything material for his pleasure. And then Cupid, Madana himself came and started shooting arrows, the arrows of Kama. And ultimately, Naranarayan Rishi looked at all of this, and he was just disgusted. What is all this nonsense? So what he did is from his body came out beautiful dancing girls, millions of times more beautiful than any of the heavenly damsels. And then they realized that we made a big aparad. We have made big offense. We have not disturbed him at all. Now we will be destroyed. So they all the apsaras and madana and everyone started bowing down and begging forgiveness. And Narayan Rishi said, don't worry. You just go and tell Indra that I am not a fool like him, attached to all these material things. I don't care anything for his kingdom. I don't care for anything. I am self-satisfied. And besides that, you see this Urvasi that I have created? You give her to Indra. Tell her it's my bakshish. It's my charity to him. So Indra, when he heard the news, he was shaking in fear. But then when he got Urvasi, she became the most favorite. He couldn't live without her. So in this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead showed that he is the source of all bliss. He is Satchidananda Vigraha. He does not require any of the temporary pleasures of this world. So why do we offer Krishna nice temples and nice bhoga, and we offer him nice singing and nice dancing? If Krishna doesn't need anything, if he's self-satisfied, Atmarama, why do we do these things for him? Because Krishna is satisfied with devotion. He is bhaktivatsala. Whatever is offered with devotion, it is that feeling of devotion, it is that sincerity that gives Krishna pleasure, not the material thing itself. You may be very intelligent, and you may be able to speak very nicely or manage very nicely, but Krishna doesn't need your management. He doesn't need your speaking. You need to do it for him to the best of your capacity. And if Krishna sees that you are offering it with humility, that will give him the greatest joy, the greatest pleasure. And he will empower you to do more and more and more to please him and to help others. That is the perfection of life. So that same Supreme Personality of Godhead, who appeared in so many various incarnations at various times throughout history, has appeared in this age of Kali Yuga as Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But in this particular incarnation, he performed a very, very special service to all society. He appeared in the role of his own devotee. Krishna spoke Gita and told us how to perfect our life. But in the age of Kali Yuga, how many people are understanding Krishna's words and taking it seriously? Therefore, Krishna comes again to show us by his own example how to follow Bhagavad Gita. And he showed us such a simple process. And by just following the process he gives us, we can perfectly realize the essence is all the conclusions of the Gita and the perfection of life. Lord Chaitanya taught us essentially two principles. The residents of Kulinagram, they once approached Lord Chaitanya and they said to him that we are grihasthas, we have families. How can we perfect our life? How can we achieve the highest destination of pure devotion to Krishna? And Lord Chaitanya gave a very simple reply. He said, you serve the Vaishnavas
and you always chant the holy names. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare.
And if we learn the science of pleasing Krishna through serving devotees and through chanting the holy names, then all the treasures of our own inner wealth will be revealed to us by the grace of God. The treasure within our heart is the pure nature of the soul, which is part and parcel of Krishna. Qualitatively, the soul is none different than Krishna. Krishna is all merciful. You and me, we cannot be all merciful, but we can be merciful. And the extent of our mercy is we connect people to the all merciful. And that is what every devotee is longing to give to every living being. When we serve the Vaishnavas and chant the holy names, it awakens this inclination by which we want to extend our service not only to all humanity, to every living being. An example of this was Haridas Thakur. He would chant the holy names of the Lord very, very, very loudly, so loudly. And one time, a caste Brahmin was very angry. He said, "Why you are chanting so loud? You are an outcast. You are from an untouchable society. What do you know about Veda? I can tell you that these mantras are very secret, and if you chant loudly, they will lose its potency. The mantras of the Vedas should be chanted silently within one's own heart." And Haridas Thakur began to quote from Shastra. He quoted from the Srimad Bhagavatam and from various Puranas, Upanishads, and he declared that the chanting loudly of the name of Krishna is 1,000 times more beneficial than chanting silently. And he explained why. Because ultimately, the purification we get from any spiritual activity is to the degree it pleases Krishna. Srameva hi kevalam. If we are not pleasing Krishna in our actions, it is all a waste of time spiritually. Krishna, when he asked the Yajnik Brahmins to give some charity, they said no. We are too busy doing our rituals and chanting our mantras. We have no time to be wasting giving food to cowherd boys. The wives, they did not know rituals. They did not know mantras. But they wanted to please Krishna. When the cowherd boys asked the Yajnik Brahmins' wives to bring food to Krishna and Balaram, the nice ladies came to the forest under the beautiful trees and brought bhoga to Krishna and Balaram. And they achieved the ultimate perfection of life. And the husbands, all they had left, they just continued doing their rituals. But they made no spiritual advancement, because all our spiritual advancement is depending on how much we please Krishna. So what pleases Krishna is to be compassionate to others. And the holy name of the Lord, if it is chanted offenselessly, sincerely, under the direction of genuine spiritual masters, then that chanting will not only liberate your own soul, but it will liberate the souls of the crickets and the snakes, mosquitoes, and the trees, and every blade of grass, and the squirrels, and the rats, and all human beings who hear it, whether they're driving by or very angrily being woken up in their sleep at night, or whether they're just walking by and thinking, oh, how nice. Everyone is purified by coming in contact with the holy name being chanted by a sincere devotee. So how much that pleases the Lord? 1,000 times more than just trying to purify yourself. So Haridas Thakur preached like this. And when the Brahman heard him, he became very angry. He could not listen. He had too much false pride. He said, just see how Kali Yuga has come. In the age of Kali, worthless, useless, untouchables are trying to explain the Vedas to the Brahmins. And then he said, if what you are saying is correct, if what you are saying is not correct, then let your nose come off. And Haridas Thakur just said, Hare Krishna, and walked away. Because after all, when you're preaching, some people will listen and some people will not listen. But it is our service, out of compassion, to give everyone the opportunity. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to teach us this wonderful path by which we can do the greatest benefit to all society, to all living beings, by spreading this wonderful, wonderful lifestyle of serving the Vaishnavas and loudly chanting the holy names of
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
And some unfortunate people, they think that you Hare Krishnas are very sentimental people. We are studying Vedanta. What is all this dancing and chanting? This is what Prakashananda Saraswati said about Lord Chaitanya. When he came to Kashi, the guru of the whole of Kashi was Prakashananda Saraswati, and he had over 60,000 sannyasi disciples. He was very staunch, powerful, learned leader. Deep realizations of Brahman. Brahma Satyam Jagan Nitya. He was very realized. And when Lord Chaitanya came to Kashi, he was very upset. He was declaring publicly that he's just a sentimentalist, this Chaitanya. He's a sannyasi. He's taken sannyas in the Shankar Sampradaya. He's a disgrace to our Sampradaya. Just a sentimentalist. With all low-class women, children, and men, he's just dancing around like a sentimentalist. If he had any good sense, he would be sitting in our ashram studying Vedanta under our direction. And they were very blasphemous. And Chandrasekhar Acharya Tapan Mishra, Lord Chaitanya told Tapan Mishra in Bangladesh, he said, you go and live in Varanasi. Tapan Mishra, Varanasi. There's no devotees there. But Lord Chaitanya personally came. And somehow or other, one day, a Brahman, Maharashtrian Brahman, one of your ancestors, he was living in Kashi, and he invited Lord Chaitanya that you please come to my home for prasad, because I'm inviting Prakashananda Saraswati and all the, and many of his chief sannyasi disciples. And Lord Chaitanya, he wasn't concerned with going there to get prasad, but he decided to go there just to liberate all these Mayavadis. So he went, and they were all sitting there with their dandas on raised platforms, Aham Brahmasmi, Soham, I am God,
tattvamasi, I am that. They were like very much proud of their high positions.
And Lord Chaitanya, when he came to the door, he saw that just when you walked in, there was a place where everyone washes their feet. So after washing his feet, he sat at that place. And they're all a raised platform. And he's sitting there. But then he began to emanate his Brahma Jyoti from his body. And since they're impersonalists, they're very attracted to the Brahma Jyoti. The Lord knows how to attract everyone according to their propensities. Ah, so they were thinking, how beautiful, how effulgent. And they said, Shripad, please come. Come, Maharaj, and sit with us. Why you are sitting down there in a dirty place? He said, I am not qualified to sit with you. You are all great Vedantists and scholars. I am a simple man. I am better to sit here. This is my proper position. His humility was something that they had never seen. And that humility had the power to melt their hearts. And Prakashananda Saraswati himself, with such sincerity, he came all the way down from his raised platform and he took Lord Chaitanya by the hand and said, please come and sit with us. And then he began he was a very cultured man, in a very respectful way, he began to chastise Lord Chaitanya. Now, why are you like these sentimentalists just chanting and dancing? Why don't you study Vedanta? And Lord Chaitanya said, because my Guru Maharaj, after I took Diksha from him, he instructed me that you are a fool. You'll never understand Vedanta. Vedanta is too difficult for you. You should just chant the holy names of Krishna. That's all. You just chant Hare Krishna. So I took my Guru's order as my life and soul and I began to chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And tears started coming out of my eyes, and my hair started standing on end, and my limbs began to tremble, and my voice began to get choked, and I was thinking that I'm going mad, I'm going crazy. So I went back to my Guru Maharaj and asked, what is happening to me? He said, you have achieved the perfection of ecstatic love of God, Krishna Prema. This is very good. Now you should spread this message of Harinam Sankirtan everywhere in the world. Fill the world with Nam Sankirtan and make everyone blissful in love of God. And then he began to explain the meaning of Vedanta. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was such a scholar. What kind of scholar? He's the author of Vedanta. Krishna says, Vedaishta Saraveraham Eva Vedyo Vedanta Krit Veda Vedeva Chaham. I am the author of Vedanta, I am the knower of the Vedas, and they are all only to know me. Vedavyas is a Shaktivesh avatar, a partial expansion of an incarnation of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna himself. So when he began to explain Vedanta, he completely annihilated and defeated all the arguments of Prakashananda and all of his followers. In fact, Srila Prabhupada explained Lord Chaitanya's process. He says, Danta also means teeth. And Vedanta means to kick out the teeth of the Vedantas. Vedanta. No teeth. And he spoke with such scholarship, with such philosophy, with such depth, with such logic, that they were speechless. All they could do was surrender to his lotus feet and say, everything you say is true. We have been in a grand illusion all this time. And they asked why? Why this doctrine we are following has been spread? And Lord Chaitanya explained, according to time and circumstance. And Prakashananda Saraswati and all the sannyasis, all the mayavadis, they surrendered to Lord Chaitanya. And they all began to loudly chant the holy names of Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
And shortly after this, Srila Sanatana Goswami from Vrindavan, he came through Kashi. And when he came through Kashi, he saw on the streets of Kashi hundreds and thousands of people weeping and dancing with their arms raised, loudly chanting Krishna's holy names. And he understood Lord Chaitanya must have been here. This is his power. So yes, this chanting is a very simple process that even a small child can perfect his life by practicing. But it is the conclusion and the essence of the greatest philosophy. Baladev Vidyabhushan, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Jiva Goswami, these are the greatest, most profound philosophers who have written books that establish the deepest, most scientific investigation of all the truths within creation of both the spiritual and material worlds. And their conclusion is to realize these truths will not be just by studying these books. We study so that we can present them and we can be convinced. But the realization comes through the chanting of the holy names. Through the chanting of the holy names, we can cleanse our hearts. And when the heart is clean of all upadis, all unwanted ideas and attachments. Internet? Everything can be used in Krishna service. Nets and internets, everything. So it's such a nice atmosphere. Materialistic people who like romance, they will sometimes travel thousands of miles to come to a place like this just to look at each other's dying bodies and talk about how beautiful they are. But devotees, we can utilize this wonderful facility to look at how beautiful Krishna is, to hear about how wonderful Krishna is, and to perfect our lives. In this way, Krishna consciousness is the art, the science of transforming material energy into spiritual energy, transforming activities from karmic activities to liberating activities by understanding how to utilize it in the service and the pleasure of the Lord. Thank you very much. Hare
Krishna.
Well, of course, if they were to agree, they would have to surrender to Krishna. So people, in order to defend their own position, they have to deny the truth of the story.
Is there any history in any other event?
It is there. But we must understand that in order to protect their position, they dismiss those histories that reveal this truth. Because after all, if they accept it, they have to surrender. How will they preach? What authority will they have? And the true evidence is let them chant Hare Krishna sincerely under the direction
one of Lord Chaitanya's followers and see if they do not experience the higher taste. All of the scriptures declare that Krishna is the that Bhagavan is ultimately a person. Their whole philosophy is not in any way supported by the Shastra. Try to understand, in order to be a Mayavadi, you have to completely change the meaning of all the scriptures. If they can change the meaning of all the scriptures, they can also change a little bit of history. Yes? And it's evident that they're changing the scriptures. Anyone who reads it with an open mind can see. When God is called Nirguna, it means he has no material qualities, but they are saying no qualities. Krishna says in Gita that I am the source of Brahman. He says that my body is eternal, it is transcendental. But they are saying it is an illusion. So in this way, there are thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of slokas in the Vedic literatures, in the Upanishads, in the Vedas, in the Puranas, the Itihastas, Mahabharata, Ramayana, which declare the supremacy of God as a person and how the spirit soul is eternally part of him. Mamayvamsa jivaloke jivabhidashana. And they have to juggle so much words and give so many interpretations to extract a fallacious, illusory meaning that I am God. That there is nothing beyond the formless. Yes? Yes and no. No, in the sense that unless Krishna gives you the power of free will, you cannot desire anything. But yes, in that Krishna gives you free will. He gives you the free will to desire as you like. But you only have that free will because Krishna has given it to you, because it is his desire to give you that free will. So your free will is his desire, but how you use it is not necessarily his desire. Are you a father? How many children do you have? One child. So, do you tie your child up with chains and tell him, do this or you will be beaten? You let him out of the house. Yes? Letting him out of the house is a risk. Because once he's out of the house, he may do things you don't like. Correct? Maybe he does or she does. Sometimes every child does. So we give our children freedom. Because without giving them some degree of freedom, there can be no happiness in our relationship. But you tell the child what to do. If you tell the child, here is 1,000 rupees. Go take this 1,000 rupees and buy some nice books to learn about God. And they take that 1,000 rupees and buy drugs. Heroin, or what do people take it into? Opium, and they get addicted to drugs. Now, does that make you happy? Is it your desire? It was your desire that they used $1,000 for the right thing, and you also gave them the freedom to also use it for the wrong thing. You can't give something without that freedom, without making a person a computer or a robot. So yes, it's your desire that your child has freedom, but it's not at all your desire that they misuse the freedom.
Krishna says, Aham Bija Pratapita. Krishna is the seed-giving father of all living beings. He's a perfect father. He gives us freedom, but he tells us how to use it. And if we misuse it, we're punished to rectify us. And if we use it properly, then we will be happy. Yes? The purpose of human life is to realize our eternal nature. We are not this body. We are not even humans. We are the immortal soul. And the soul has a relationship with the Supreme Soul, or Krishna. The purpose of human life is to realize our eternal condition beyond the sufferings of this world and our relationship with God. And everything else is a waste of time. Therefore, whatever our occupation it is, whatever our responsibilities and family may be, it should all be very intelligently performed in pursuance of the goal of life. Today we were discussing with many wonderful students and explaining, being a student is very good, but study and learn to utilize for the goal of life, self-realization. Everything can be utilized under good direction toward the goal of life. But we need that spiritual direction. We need to hear from Krishna and his representatives, and we need to be willing to follow. It means to have direct experience of the eternal glory of your soul, which is full of bliss, and to act according to what gives bliss to the soul, and that is service to the Supreme Soul, to Krishna. If you chant Hare Krishna sincerely and associate with devotees and hear from them nicely, these things will naturally be awakened and understood from within your heart. At this time, I would like to invite everyone to participate in this wonderful gift of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the congregational chanting of the holy names of Krishna.